Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking about the Coast Guard cutter Sundew. It's now retired, but still active. Then Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Coast Guard vet Mark Northrup. Among other things, Mark is the chair of the show's advisory board. And yeah, he served on the Sundew. Welcome, Mark.
Semper Paratus, Denny.
And retired bosun's mate, Chief Terry Rice, also served on the Sundew. I think he trained Mark when he was on it. And he coordinated the recent reunion on the Sundew. Welcome, Terry.
Oh, good afternoon, Colonel.
Okay, Mark, give us a quick summary of your time in the Coast Guard and on the Sundew.
Well, I did about 2.5 years on the Sundew back in the early 80s. I served with Terry. He was one of the guys in the deck force. And I was one of the guys up on the bridge, driving the ship, trying to keep the ship off the rocks while he worked the buoys. So I did a couple other tours in the Coast Guard, one overseas in Japan, and another tour as an exec on a ship in Alaska. And I have been out for several years now, but I recall those days fondly, as Terry does too.
I'm sure you're right. Terry, your turn.
Well, I'm a retired chief, bosun's mate. I spent 21 years in the Coast Guard. I'm married to a great event planner. Her name is Terry, so we go by Terry and Terry. And I spent 3 years on the Coast Guard cutter Sundew, and it was my favorite unit.
What rank were you while you were there? What kind of position did you hold on the boat?
I was a non-rate. I was a seaman, an E3, and at the time I was on there, I was the leading seaman on the Sundew.
Hey, Terry, you said it was your favorite assignment in the Coast Guard. Why is that? It certainly wasn't because of the officers.
Well, the officers actually were pretty good, too. But the crew made the ship special. You know, we worked extremely hard at times, and we also played hard. We were a ship of brothers. The Sundew was my home for 3 years. Being single back in the days, I basically had a locker and a rack, and that was my home. So it was my home. I loved it.
That makes sense.
So, Terry, what made the Sundew so special? I mean, was it the mission? Was it the place? What was it that stands out for you?
Without a doubt, the crew made the ship special. I can't talk high enough about the people that I worked with, played with, learned from, had some very good mentors on the ship. And the commanding officers, along with the officers, were great people. So it's one of my units that I'll always cherish, and it's probably my favorite unit.
You know, it's delightful to have that group, and that would explain to me probably why you decided to promote a reunion. Am I right?
Right. Back in, I guess it was January, I learned that the cutter Sundew was sold to the city of Duluth and then subsequently sold to a guy named Jeff Foster. And I found him on Facebook, gave him a call, and I said, you know, what's the chances of one of these times when you get the ship underway that we could have a reunion? And basically, Jeff rolled the carpet out at that time for us. And for me, the next few months was just, it was bliss. I loved it. I got to reconnect with, I think we had 49 sailors show up. So I talked to about 40 of them over the phone through Facebook and reconnected, heard all the stories. So it was a great planning event. And I think we ended up with 106 people showing up for the reunion. I think 49, 51 sailors, I believe.
Terry, tell me, how is it an 80-year-old ship can still be seaworthy? I mean, I'm stunned by it. Why?
Well, I believe it was just built right. You know, the ships was originally designed by the Lighthouse Service, which I didn't know, and I kind of did a little research for this. And then the final design was produced by the Marine Iron and Shipbuilding of Duluth, and they did it right. It was a great ship to work buoys, and obviously it lasted 60 years before it was decommissioned, so the design was great for the ship.
I think, too, Danny, also, you know, the ships that served on the Great Lakes and the fresh water, they just don't age. And even though the Sundew was mothballed for over 10 years sitting at the dock, when Jeff bought it, with a little bit of maintenance and elbow grease, he got the ship underway. And everybody stood there on the dock with their jaws dropped, thinking, how could that ship get underway sitting cold for so long? But the truth is, those ships just, they never age. And they're wonderful ships. The Sundew had an additional ice-breaking hull, and we had Cooper Bessemers, Terry. Remember that? They ran a little bit higher horsepower, and we could make 14 knots in the following sea, and we could break ice with the best of them.
You know, I would bet the fact that it wasn't salt water had something to do with how much ice you had and how long the boat lasts, how many years it lasted. Because saltwater ships don't last that long, do they?
Well,
no, they don't. Terry, I got a question for you, Terry.
Yeah.
The deck forest berthing area was down there next to the hull. How loud was it when we were breaking ice?
It was extremely loud, but you got used to it. And I remember the first day I got underway on board the ship, right aft of my berthing area was the engine room. And the old Cooper Bessemers, when they lit them off, you could actually hear the pistons going up and down. And it was extremely noisy. You had air vents going on. But within a week or two, you're used to it. And actually, during the ice breaking, you could actually sleep, which is hard to believe as loud as it was.
That's probably because you're so dog tired from doing all the work and maintaining the lighthouses and the buoys, sir.
We did work many, and I mean many, 16, 18 hours a day. But it was rewarding work.
Okay. Is there any one mission that stands out, a rescue or operation that you recall distinctly?
The one thing that always stands out to me is I got kind of two memories. One memory was a 6x20-foot buoy broke loose in 18 to 20-foot seas on Lake Superior. And we had to gripe it back to the deck in the middle of the night. And the other thing that always stuck out to me is the anniversary of the Edmund Fitzgerald. The ship was within about 10 to 15 miles of the exact location of the Fitzgerald. And we had a seaman on board named Marty Marsh. He was playing his guitar and he was singing the song of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And that I'll always remember that.
Yeah, you know, Denny, the memory of the Edmund Fitzgerald and the ships that went down on Lake Superior in particular is a memory that those of us that served in the Great Lakes still think often about it, because it's a dangerous body of water and ships don't get in trouble up there.
I believe that. How big was the Sundew and how many people could it reasonably hold? How big was the crew?
The ship was 180 foot long. I believe the beam is 39 foot wide, maybe 37. Normal crew, if I remember correctly, was 54 was the complement. But the ship, for instance, on the reunion, we had 106 guests and approximately 20 crew. I do remember Jeff Foster telling me, I asked him if we could get 20, 30, 40 people, and he said that he had a room for 150 people. He had 150 life jackets. So,
and Denny, I think it's important to know, these ships were working ships. They're not glamorous. They got dirty, they got beat up, and we rode them hard because we worked the lights and the aids to navigation, the buoys. We did a lot of special operations, fish stocking, water sampling. We did everything and anything we could do it because the platform was just so robust. And because of that, all those ships, for the most part, are still sailing in third world countries in Africa, Latin America, and in Asia. They got sold off and given away for third world countries to continue to use those ships. So the Sundew is a little bit unique. It's still in the U.S. of A.
Indeed. Terry, we're about out of time. What final comment would you make about the reunion? Did you enjoy it? Clearly you did. Do you plan another one? What are your final thoughts?
I guess my final thoughts are that I would really like to thank Jeff Foster for allowing this reunion to happen. I want to thank the people that also assisted with the reunion. Namely John Connor. He was a chief that retired in Duluth, and he helped me with all the local intel. And if Jeff Foster will have us, we'd like to have another reunion in the future.
Makes sense to me. Terry, thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. This was cool. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Colonel.
And there's more to discuss on the Sundew. We'll meet the National Guardsman, Jeff Foster, who owns it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. It's time to do some deep knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do about 40 of them. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
The Iraq War is more than 20 years old, and troops are still on the ground in Iraq. But why?
For too long, lawmakers have sent American troops to Iraq and beyond in support of vague missions that don't tie to a vital national interest.
At Concerned Veterans for America, we're translating our unique experiences as veterans to call for a better foreign policy that makes Americans safer and more prosperous.
Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Mark Northrup, who served on the Coast Guard cutter Sundew. And joining us now is Jeff Foster, who now owns the Sundew. Welcome aboard, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Another great day to be an American.
Yes, sir. Jeff, tell us about your time in uniform. I think you were in the Air National Guard.
Yes, I was. I joined in December of 1971. And I was in the Guard until 1992. The Minnesota Air National Guard, the 148th and 179th up in Duluth, Minnesota, based out of the Duluth Airport. And enjoyed close to 21 years in the Air National Guard with all my friends and partners in crime up there. I had a wonderful experience being in the Air National Guard. I felt we accomplished quite a bit. We never were called for Vietnam. Been called for a number of other things over the years, which the Guard has handled with the great ability. When I started there, we had F-101s, so we ended up with F-4s, and back in 90, we went to F-16s. A great unit with a great tradition, and we're well thought of and well established unit in the Air National Guard.
So how is it that an Air Force guy got interested in and purchased a Coast Guard cutter?
Well, that story is my grandfather was a ship captain. He was the ship captain of the Joe Thompson, which is a big ore carrier on the Great Lakes. He retired from that. He's Norwegian, of course, and that makes me half Norwegian. And I think I have water in my veins. But in any event, he, from a young boy who grew up on a lake and, you know, driving boats when I was five, I guess. And boating has always been a big part of my life. I fly a lot and I do a bunch of crazy things, but I ended up in Alaska and I ran a halibut boat in Alaska, which, and over this period of time, I've had my Coast Guard master's license. So when you're asking about the Sundew, I can say that I also have a trucking business. So I guess I need to start how I got to own it. I should start with how it came up for sale.
Sure.
It was given by Representative Obistar of the state of Minnesota. I got the Coast Guard to give it when they decommissioned it in 2004. He got the Coast Guard to give it to the city of Duluth, who promptly gave it to the DEC, Duluth Entertainment Convention Center, to sit beside an ore boat that they had as a museum. And the Sundew was going to be a museum ship also. And soon after they had it, they realized it really didn't work for them, the city of Duluth and the DEC. But they had to keep it for 5 years. That was a deal with the Coast Guard. And ultimately, they decided that it was time to rid themselves of this because it was just more work than it wasn't bringing in the revenues that they thought. So they were looking for a way to rid themselves of it, which all of a sudden, if you're from Duluth, Minnesota, you actually realize that there were 39 of these boats commissioned to be built by the Coast Guard. And it was right around 1939. So, you know, then of course the war years and a lot of built boats are being built everywhere, all over. Well, 38 of the 39 180s, like the Sundew, the Woodrush, 38 of the 39 were built in Duluth, Minnesota by the men and women of Northern Minnesota, Northern Wisconsin and all over. But in any event, so this boat now is built here. And it's been seen, first was Woodrush and then the Sundew, and they're both exactly the same except for the number on them and a few other things, obviously. But all of a sudden, all these people in the city of Duluth think that this is a Duluth treasure, and the Dec didn't want to be the ones to rid themselves of this Duluth treasure, so they look for someone maybe to take it off their hands. So they weren't the bad guy. And they did some searching and found out that I had a 700-foot dock at a dockage in Superior with nothing at it. And then they dug a little further and found out that I had already had my Coast Guard master's license. And I tell the story that they came at me like a heat-seeking missile. Ultimately, in 2009, we bought it. And I have to say, it was never supposed to run again. These ships, the 180s, when they were built, they never went cold, even if it was in station in Duluth, Minnesota, when it was frozen into the ice for 2 months during the layup. It was still full of people, and they were working on it every day, you know, 24/7. So all of a sudden, there's a museum ship. So they did a bunch of things to it that really was actually horrible. And when we bought it, we didn't know that we could get it running or not. But we spent 7 months to get three of the six engines running, and a main, a service generator and a bow thruster. And then took about another 4 months after that, once we got it underway, to get all the rest of the engines and systems online. And we've rebuilt two of the engines already. So
wow, that's impressive. I mean, this isn't just something that you thought about. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking about the Coast Guard Cutter Sundew. Jeff, so you basically inherit's the wrong word, but you ended up with the ship and you took it seriously. You got it ready to rock. And by the way, we just earlier were talking about the fact that you let a bunch of old coasties gather on your ship for a reunion. Did that work out okay for you?
Oh, wow. It was amazing. They came, you know, we've made it available to, if you've served on the Sundew or a 180 or you're a Coast Guard guy, you know, or a military guy, it doesn't matter. If you're in Duluth, Minnesota, you want to see this, it will absolutely make every effort. And if we're going to happen to be taking it out, which is frequently, we'll come along. Anyway, so a couple of guys, Terry Rice and John Connor, they knew of that. And then Terry Rice decided, hey, let's have a reunion. So he put together a reunion that was remarkable.
Yeah. We just talked about the reunion. I just want to make sure, I know the Coasties there enjoyed it. I just want to make sure that they didn't abuse you.
Oh, well, they always abuse you. no, actually, it was really remarkable. They were so thrilled and happy to be around each other again. They're amazing stories. And then when we went out on it for 4 hours, and there was a captain there that was there that we just had him drive the boat, and it remarkably well, of course, he did, and it was just a treasured moment for not only myself but my wife, all the crews. They just were really it's really what we're all about, is preserving this piece of history and preserving it as it was, not to do any destruction of anything in the boat to make it bigger or more luxurious. We've actually dug out the tables. When the Dec had it as a museum, they tore it the domestic part. When we ended up with it, we had to go find the tables, which they had down in the hold, and put everything back the way it was. So it's really interesting that we've really preserved this piece of history.
Jeff, the Sundew is clearly available even for non-coasties to enjoy. How would someone interested in doing that contact you?
The best way to do it, I have an email address. It'd be as a pilot, of course, it's called floatpilot206@gmail.com. So FLOATPILOT 206@gmail.com. But yeah, it's, you know, anybody that has an interest or has any questions or anything, we're happy to answer any questions and to make the vessel, the boat, the Sundew, available to anyone that might be passing through Duluth.
That sounds
Jeff,
awesome.
Jeff, this is Mark. How often do you get it underway?
Oh, it depends. It depends on the season. You know, we don't have a crew is a volunteer crew. I guess I should really mention that. And so these are all folks from all different walks of life. We have a guy that one of the chief who he retired off the Sundew in 2002, lives in Minneapolis, has a big job. But it was an engineer for one of the big school districts down in Minneapolis. He's kind of the head of our engineering department. We have another guy who served under him. We have there and happens to work for my trucking company as well. And two other guys, Doug Swanson and Sean Lavelle. There's a number of guys that engineers can get it started and take care of a lot of the maintenance and the engines and all that. But the rest of the crew, again, a lot of mariners. There's guys who worked for the railroad, a bunch of pilots, friends. You know, like I say, I was in the Air National Guard for 21 years. So I know a lot of people up there and in aviation and just personal friends and that have come to be even a bigger part of our lives since the Sundu has come together.
That sounds awesome. I wish we had time to keep going because this sounds like something that everybody should be interested in. The trick is getting to it. Hey, but you can do it if you decide to. Thank you, yeah. Mark, for joining us today and for putting all this together. I appreciate you, bro.
Well, mostly thanks to Jeff for taking care of my old ship. And there's a lot of us old coasties out here with tears in our eyes right now.
And thank you, Jeff, for your service in uniform, what you're doing now to support the history of our nation and the Coast Guard. God bless you. I really appreciate you.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. Thank you so very much. And we'll continue to take good care of her.
Thank you. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Quentin Roberts will review last weekend's Surface Academy football games. They will open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it's Service Academy football time. I'm joined, of course, by our football co-host, Air Force vet Quentin Roberts. Welcome, brother.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here today. Denny, how you doing?
It's a wonderful day. I love this season, and the weather's pretty good in Michigan, too, so therefore I don't have anything to gripe about. So let's talk about football. I suppose we should start with the only Surface Academy team that won last week, Air Force. So let's start there.
Well, let's go to the wild blue yonder, Denny, where Air Force rolled past Robert Morris in their season opener, 42-7. You know, Air Force is breaking in a new quarterback this year, and it is senior quarterback Zach Larrier, who rushed for two touchdowns and threw for another to lead the Falcons to a 42-7 win over Robert Morris in the 2023 season opener at Falcon Stadium. And this is actually the 17th straight season opening win for Air Force. I must have missed one, Denny, because in my 39 years of being affiliated with the Academy, I can't remember one loss, but I guess there was a loss in there somewhere.
That's a special weekend, though, right? Isn't that Parents Weekend?
It is Parents Weekend. And so the idea is that the parents go home happy. And typically, a victory by the football team certainly helps the cause. And it's especially in this case where the Falcon offense put up 469 yards of total offense, 374 yards of them on the ground. And senior running back John Lee Elridge, the third, rushed for 72 yards on only four attempts, highlighted by a 65-yard run to open the third quarter. So it was really a total rout, very impressive performance by the Falcons, and things will get tougher.
Well, they will. And, you know, sort of the opposite happened with Army. I don't think the offensive team came onto the field. The defensive team did most of the scoring. Even at that, Army won the first three quarters, but ended up losing 17-13.
They certainly did, Danny. And you're very right that the story of the game was Army's defense. The defense really held University of Louisiana Monroe Warhawks to 299 total yards and only 92 pass yards. But of that 299 yards, probably about 100 of that came within 6 minutes to go of the game. Army was up 13-3 with about 6 minutes left to go in the game. And then the dam broke. Louisiana Monroe had a Hunter Smith 62-yard run for a touchdown, one play for 62 yards that only took 11 seconds off of the clock. But Army got the ball back with, 5 minutes and some change left. And under their old offense, Denny, we could count on them to run that ball out. We know that option game, they get 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards. And you keep adding them up and you let the clock continue to tick and you walk away with a victory. Well, remember, Army has changed their offense this year. And so it is a much more difficult proposition as they become accustomed to running what's more of a conventional offense. All they were only able to amass 283 yards of total offense and 176 on the ground, which does not sound bad. But, you know, we heard Air Force ran for 375 yards, and in their pure option days, you could count on Army to run for at least 300 yards a game. So a much different game for Army, and they are going to have to learn how to play in this new system. And it's going to take some time. They've got a little bit of a learning curve, but the defense kept them in the game. They still only gave up 17 points. And when you do that, typically you're going to have a chance to win. But Army dropped 14 points in the fourth quarter and dropped their first game of the season, 17-13, to the University of Louisiana Monroe Warhawks.
And we've already discussed that Navy played their first game 2 weeks ago against Notre Dame in Ireland and lost. So as we look at the end of the first week of play, Air Force is looking good, and I'm hoping that Army can learn something by watching Air Force. We need to get some offense there, don't we?
Well, Army does have to go kind of back to the drawing board a little bit. Again, it's, you know, here's what I look at. Week one, as we've learned in any statistical class, is just 1 point. Now, after week two, you've got 2 points, and you can begin to draw a line between them. Now, is that line going up? Is that line going down, or is that line remaining flat? Hopefully for all three teams, the line will go up, meaning that they are ascending, that they are getting better. They're improving in every facet of the game, offense, defense, special teams, and that they are all able to come out with a victory. It's going to be difficult. For Air Force, they've got Fort Sam Houston. Fort Sam Houston is just moving up to the Division 1A level. They have won multiple national championships at the Division II level, and they redshirted a lot of players last year in order to be bigger, stronger, faster. So they only lost to BYU 14-0 in their first game, and they are hungry for their first victory at the Division I level, and so that game will be in Houston, Texas.
Now, Army's, they're going to host Delaware State. I don't know how good Delaware State is. Do you?
Well, Delaware State is a... Interestingly, they are an HBCU, historically black college, out of Delaware. And, you know, this should be a get well game for Army. Let's just put it that way. All right. Delaware State is not known for their football. They typically will field a decent team, but I don't think anything that Army has to worry about. As a matter of fact, they are 0-1 as they lost to Bowie State in their first game of the season. So Army should get well. They'll get a chance to really breathe a little bit more. And I expect to see some big plays in Mikey Stadium.
Amen, brother. And Navy at Wagner.
Actually, Navy will host Wagner. They certainly do. They come back home and it's going to be good at home cooking, Denny. As Wagner is also 0-1, the Wagner Seahawks. as they drop their first game of the season, 46-16 to Fordham. I expect Navy's Coach Brian Newberry to get his first victory as a head coach. And all of our service academy teams will at least have one victory. And I expect Air Force to come away with their second victory of the season.
This sounds good to me. There we go. We're going to be seeing some really fine service academy football this season. We're off to a start, and looks like next week's going to be better. Stay tuned. Thank you, Quentin. We'll be back at it again next week, and hopefully with all the good reports that your nose told you that you will be seeing next week.
Can't wait, Denny. Can't wait.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your ranger ready, then stand at ease.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com, we are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com, use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Army vet Pauline wrote that it looks like the government is going to start pushing COVID shots and masks again. What is going on?
Pauline, our lead guests for the next 2 weeks will discuss this from very different perspectives. But the bottom line is, it's nonsense.
And Joe is a Navy vet and is discouraging his kids from joining the military. You've been talking about what a mess our military is, and he believes you.
Joe, I'm sorry to say that you're doing the right thing. Our military is a mess. But that said, there are a lot of very good people serving right now. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
On 12 September 1814, during the War of 1812, a British fleet under Sir Alexander Cochrane began the bombardment of Fort McHenry, the last American defense before Baltimore. Lawyer Francis Scott Key had approached the British attackers seeking the release of a friend who was being held for unfriendly acts toward the British. Key himself was detained overnight on September 13 and witnessed the bombardment of Fort McHenry from a British ship. As the sun rose, Key was amazed to see the American flag still flying over the battered fort. This experience inspired Key to write the lyrics to The Star-Spangled Banner and adapt them to the tune of a well-known British drinking song. The Star-Spangled Banner was officially recognized as the national anthem in 1931.
Oh, say can you see? And on the 14th of September, 1847, during the Mexican-American War, our forces under General Winfield Scott entered Mexico City and raised the American flag over the halls of Montezuma, concluding a devastating advance that began with an amphibious landing at Veracruz 6 months earlier. The Mexican-American War began with a dispute over the U.S. government's 1845 annexation of Texas. In January 1846, President James Polk, a strong advocate of westward expansion, ordered General Zachary Taylor to occupy the disputed territory between the Nueces and the Rio Grande Rivers. Mexican troops attacked Taylor's forces, and on May 13, 1846, Congress approved a declaration of war against Mexico. On the 9th of March, 1847, our forces, under General Winfield Scott, invaded Mexico 3 miles south of Veracruz. They encountered very little resistance from the Mexicans massed at the fortified city of Veracruz, and by nightfall, the last of Scott's 10,000 men came ashore without the loss of a single life. It was the largest amphibious landing in U.S. history, not surpassed until World War II. By March 29th, with very few casualties, Scott's forces had taken Veracruz and its massive fortress, San Juan de Ulna. On September 14th, Scott's forces reached the Mexican capital. In September, our forces entered the Mexican capital and raised our flag over the halls of Montezuma, ending the war. In February 1848, representatives from the U.S. and Mexico signed the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, formally ending the Mexican War, recognizing Texas as a part of the United States, and extending our boundaries west to the Pacific Ocean.
And Manifest Destiny was a reality.
It was, and is.
And on 14 September 1862, during our Civil War, Robert E. Lee's exhausted Confederate forces held off pursuing Yankees by closing two passes through Maryland's South Mountain, allowing Lee time to gather his forces further west along Antietam Creek near Sharpsburg. After the Second Battle of Bull Run, Virginia, in late August 1862, Lee decided to invade Maryland to raise supplies. He also hoped a decisive win would earn the South foreign recognition. As he moved, he split his army into five sections while the hungry rebels searched for supplies. A copy of the Confederate plans accidentally fell into Union hands when the orders were left in an abandoned campsite outside of Frederick, Maryland. McClellan now knew that Lee's force was in pieces, but he was slow to react. As Lee moved into western Maryland, he left detachments to guard Crampton's Gap and Turner's Gap through South Mountain. If McClellan had penetrated the passes, he would have found Lee's army scattered and vulnerable. South Mountain, a 50-mile-long ridge, contained several passes, but Crampton's Gap and Turner's Gap were the most important. The National Road ran through Turner's Gap to the north, and Crampton's Gap connected western Maryland to Harper's Ferry, Virginia. The Union troops drove the Confederates away at Crampton's Gap, but were initially unable to expel the Confederates from Turner's Gap. However, the rebels did retreat the next morning. Union losses for the day amounted to 2,300 dead and wounded, including the death of Major General Jesse Reno. The Confederates lost 2,700. These engagements were a mere prelude to the Battle of Antietam. Although costly, they allowed Lee time to assemble his scattered bands at Sharpsburg.
You know, Lee was a great general. He did a good job. I wish he'd stayed with the Union. And on the 15th of September, 1916, during World War I, during the Battle of the Somme, the British launched a major offensive against the Germans, employing tanks for the first time in history. At Fleurs-Courcelette, some of the 40 or so primitive tanks advanced over a mile into the enemy lines, but they were too slow to hold their positions during the German counterattack and subject to mechanical breakdown. However, General Douglas Haig, commander of Allied forces at the Somme, saw the promise of the new instrument of war and ordered the War Department to produce hundreds more. And I guess he was right. There are tanks today, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. And on 15 September 1950, during the Korean War, U.S. Marines landed at Incheon on the west coast of Korea, 100 miles south of the 30th parallel and just 25 miles from Seoul. The location had been criticized as too risky, but U.N. Supreme Commander Douglas MacArthur insisted on carrying out the landing. By the early evening, the Marines had overcome moderate resistance and secured Incheon. The brilliant landing cut the North Korean forces in two, and the U.S.-led U.N. force pushed inland to recapture Seoul, the South Korean capital that had fallen to the communists in June. Allied forces then converged from the north and the south, devastating the North Korean army and taking 125,000 enemy troops prisoner.
That was an awesome, well-done, well-thought-out fight. Good job. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, recently in St. Louis, Missouri, two persons approached a woman as she walked to her car and asked to use her phone, police said. When the woman said she didn't have a phone on her, one of them, a 13-year-old boy, pulled out a gun and demanded her car keys and money, which she handed over. As the two robbers got into her car, the teen with the gun became distracted, giving the woman a chance to grab her own gun and fire at the teen, wounding him. The two fled, but responding officers later found the wounded teen and took him to a hospital before charging him as a juvenile.
Thanks, Colonel. I find this story disconcerting simply because of the young age of one of the robbers. probably because my youngest son, Phoenix, is the same age. When I look at my son, I just can't imagine him ever doing anything like this. But the story is true, and things like this happen every day now, so I'm forced to deal with it. Let's analyze the woman's performance strictly from a self-defense perspective. First, when I see a 13-year-old boy walking through a parking lot, I don't automatically hear warning bells and whistles going off in my head. There's no spider sense that takes over, simply because I don't naturally see a young boy as a life or death threat. Apparently, this woman didn't either, because she appeared to be caught off guard by the two robbers. I can't slight her for this, simply because the boy was so young that most people wouldn't expect him to threaten them with a gun. But he did. It's sad that we live in a world like this, but we do. So let's all adapt and make the change in our self-defense mindset. The reality is this. Sometimes children kill adults with guns. Second, she handed over her car keys and money when threatened. I can't fault her there either. I might have done the same thing in her situation simply because I'm not yet mentally prepared to shoot a boy the same age as my youngest son. I need to rethink that in light of this story. All of us should ask ourselves, when are we willing to use deadly force? Can you shoot a child who is threatening to kill you? Can you shoot a woman? You should answer the questions now simply because you won't have the time or the presence of mind to think clearly while a gun is pointed at you. Third, this woman was in sufficient fear of death or serious bodily injury that she decided to use her own gun. I can't fault her there as well. I don't know what she was feeling, and quite frankly, a 13-year-old boy is quite capable of pulling a trigger and killing an adult. So, I'm not going to second-guess her on that either. Listen. This was a terrible situation, but the ugly truth is that the woman was in danger of death or serious injury, so she used her gun to survive. That's what the gun's there for. I'm glad the child didn't die, and I hope he learns his lesson and gets the help he needs. Front Lines of Freedom salutes this St. Louis woman and wishes her all the best as she recovers from this emotionally traumatic experience in her life.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is The Hero of World War II That No One Knows About. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog, get the link. You can watch it for free. We're going to review it at the end of the month. I'd really appreciate getting your comments about it. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, Dr. Peter McCullough will discuss the COVID threat. Then Cassie Pickard from Hope Network will discuss suicide, a veteran issue. And Quinn Roberts will review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And Marines, Gil and Skip, will present Border and Books. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. This Monday is Patriot Day, the day we remember 9/11. Let's be sure to do that. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.